When they eject you and make you choose between your faith and the truth in them, you don't have a choice. He that hateth not father, mother, wife, children, brother, sister, when it's a choice between God and his truth in them, you've got to choose God. But don't force the choice. I can tell you, if you walk not of this world because Jesus has chosen you out of the world, the choice will be forced upon you in God's time. You don't have to force it. That's the message that I'm getting across to you. Other people saying, when going to a Catholic church, I heard it's mandatory to make the sign of the cross as a sign of reverence. What can I do? I've been known to sit down and humorously go like this just for food and say, just in case we're wrong. I mean, I don't think you go to hell for doing that. I love that film Airplane, where that squalling, bawling, loud mouth was sitting there only. I mean, the best thing I ever saw a representative of the Catholic Church ever do was on that airplane just before they were crashing and crash landing. The guy was bawling and squalling, and the priest was bowing his head, and he was over here whining. And the priest went, bam! And let him have it. Don't worry about it. Just act like you're fixing your buttons. Be a little human. Don't get so spiritual you're miserable. Good night. Eagle Rock is two words, you foreigners over there. I mean, if you're reading as many of these as I read tonight, you'd think Inglewood, that's Eagle Rock. Two words, though, not one. A year ago this Friday, I got out of the military. A year ago this Friday, I got home from the military. And a year ago this Friday, you dangled me on the pyramid. It's been a frustrating year, but I enjoyed it. Hartford, what is a demythologizer? Well, I'll tell you this, it's not a Pavlovian dog. That comes out of the higher criticism of German theology that seeks to take the myth out of Scripture, namely, remove all miracle and apply the God of reason to it and reduce it down to facts separated from what would require a belief in the supernatural. It is a humanization of Scripture by little peanut brains that don't believe that God exists, so they won't take it out of the Scripture. I've been enjoying your little speech for the last 30 minutes. I don't make little speeches. They're either short or long, but they're never little. Have you heard of the book Lost Continent of Mu? Yeah, I have. I'll be on Mu. I will teach on Mu. Let's just go home. I just tuned in, Long Beach says, where in the Bible do I find that Jesus was born in September and what day? You really want shortcuts, don't you? Try the Reader's Digest Bible first. It's not there. You just got to watch a while. I teach you tonight the way women give directions. You go down the street, when you come to the big red barn on the left, that's not it. Now you go a little further. It's not in the Reader's Digest Bible. Ontario. My son wants to know what's a Gideon. You give $100 a month or you tithe. Either one. Will you explain why Christ was born in September? I already did. I have a message on it, a Sunday morning message a few weeks ago. It's timed with the Feast of the Trumpets. And those feast days, Paul said, were shadows of things to come. And the Feast of the Trumpets proclaimed what I just said earlier. Proclaimed redemption. It announced redemption. Therefore, God, right on time, has the Redeemer, kin with us, born on the day of the Feast of the Trumpets. in my judgment. I'll read to you. Tired of talking. Do what I want. You've been running this show the whole hour, whole 2 hours. I'm going to do it myself now. I'm the host. I'm going to read. That was the first page. Ralph Waldo Emerson expressed a strange surprise in his essay on Stonehenge about the British. Archaeologists spend, you know who's done most of it. Archaeologists spend millions of dollars and years of labor digging up the ruins of Egypt and Mesopotamia, of Central America, Indian relics in North America, while little or no efforts were made to solve the mysteries of Stonehenge and Avebury and other British stone circles. Emerson expressed his surprise at this in his essay on Stonehenge. Quote, "The chief mystery is that any mystery should have been allowed to settle on so remarkable a monument in a country on which all the muses have kept their eyes now for 1,800 years. We are not yet too late." This is Ralph Waldo Emerson speaking. "We're not yet too late to learn much more than is known of this structure. Some diligent fellows, or Lyard, remember Lyard was the one that dug up Nineveh, will arrive stone by stone at the whole history. By that exhaustive British sense and perseverance, so whimsical in its choice of objects, which leaves its own Stonehenge or choir gower to the rabbits while it opens pyramids and uncovers Nineveh. Stonehenge, in virtue of the simplicity of its plan and its good preservation, is as if new and recent, and 1,000 years hence, men will thank this age for the acrid history it will eliminate." That's Emerson bemoaning the failure to do it and anticipating the day somebody unravels Stonehenge. I'll guarantee you, when I'm done, more people are going to want to go to England and France than they do to Egypt. From the south of Portugal, northward along the Bay of Biscay in Brittany, along the western side of the British Isles, as far north as the Orkneys, and into Denmark, Sweden, and Norway, we find gigantic stones and stone structures erected by the hands of early man. Several types of these structures have been defined. Menhirs, or long stones standing on end. Dolmens, table stones. House-like structures with stone labs or boulders for walls and roof, most of the latter serving originally as tombs, covered with mounds of dirt, called tumuli. A good description of these structures is out of an ancient National Geographic magazine as early as 1923, which reads, along with many illustrations, "Alignments are groups of menhirs arranged in line or in several parallel lines. Cromlechs are groups of menhirs standing in a circle or an arc of a circle, more rarely a square, usually terminating an alignment or surrounding a tumulus. The dimensions are sometimes incredible. The great menhir, that's stones that stand on end, the great menhir near
Loch Mareacher, now thrown down and broken, probably by an earthquake, parenthesis says, was nearly 70 feet high. You know how high that is? What we got here, 20 feet, 15 feet? Four to five times higher than this. The poor old prehistoric alley-oops with clubs erected. Nearly 70 feet high and weighed some 375 tons. You know how heavy that is? Not a slingshot rock. Some of the dolmens, tabletop, have a height of 18 to 20 feet. With roof slabs 20 to 35 feet in area and several feet thick. Baring Gould mentions one near Nevis, whose capstone measured 45 feet in length and 27 in breadth and 6 feet thick. For 1,800 years, those British have been sailing off to dig up things out of the desert and say, oh, there's a rock to these things right at home. The alignments of Karnak in 10 to 13 parallel rows stretch across the country for nearly 5 miles. The tumulus of Mont St. Michael, or Michel, looks like a natural knoll dwarfing the modern chapel which crowns it. It's hard to realize it was heaped by human hands. All menhirs, cromlechs, menhirs standing erect, cromlechs in circles, alignments in a straight row, were from their beginning open to the sky. Dolmens and similar constructions were all originally covered by tumuli, since removed in many cases in the course of farming and building and other things. End of the quote from the National Geographic. The amazing thing is the author of this article in 1923 makes no attempt to investigate who may have erected those gigantic structures. He's just content to describe them and say they're there. In Britain, we find several ancient circles of large stones standing on end. The best known of them are Stonehenge, Avebury, and Keswick. All of them are known as Druidic circles. Avebury Circle on the Wiltshire Downs is before the largest and most ancient of the stone circles in Britain. Look out. You think they just blew out of the ground like that? And all these British, they sail off to dig up things in Nineveh. Pay no attention. You know? This place for sheep to scratch their back. That funny attitude, you know. Nothing's exciting unless it's far away. And these have always been here. Why? Why are they in Britain? Look at the aerial view of Avebury. That's really interesting. An aerial view of Avebury from the north, showing the stones and villages within the earthwork. At the top left above the road, you see that? At the top left above the road can be seen the stones of the Kennet Avenue. Look at that. What is that? Don't even have anything saying about... Oh, here, over page, Avebury from the north-northwest, showing the houses inside the earthwork. Top right is Silbury Hill. Somebody just asked me, do I know where Silbury Hill is? Sure do, it's on page 4, right here. Top right is Silbury Hill, to its left, the gentle slope of Waden Hill. You know where Waden Hill is? And left again beside the road is Kennet Avenue. There it is. Sure enough. Yeah. Come on, do me a good job on this, you cameraman. Back up till you get the full perspective. See if I can describe this a little to you. You stay still. Let me do the moving for a minute. Did you ever try to write on a blackboard by looking in the mirror? Can you get your color coordinator to brighten that up a bit some way or other back there, Joe? Who's handling the visual? You know, take the blue of my shirt away and a few other things and see if you can sharpen that black and white picture and make it color. If you can't make it color, I'm not going to let them look at it. It's a little better now. Over here is Silbury Hill. Right here is the... How do you look upside down? But here you see the stones around this encircled area, this great Abbey. Now, see if you can zoom in a little to like point the shadows of these stones out. The point I want to make with this picture is they just build around it, you know. It's just rocks that get in their way. I mean, they dig up one stupid rock way down in the desert of Arabia and it gets excited they can't hardly see. They got, you know, if you can zoom in real close to me here, here are the stones lined along this road. You can see their shadows here. The stones follow the trail all the way in here until you get into the big circle. Then you have the giant stones laid out in intricate patterns. But to them, they're just a bothersome stones in that Abbey circle. Who built this big mound and did these giant stone monuments in here? Who in the world cares, some people do, say, I do. I told you I'm going to do what I want to do. Now, that's interesting. Here's a little close-up of the way those rocks look, weathered and beat on. If you can pick some of the shadows out of that, you'll see the rocks in the distance. Don't you people change your picture at home. We'll do it here. Give it in color again, Joe. Yeah, I like that better. You see all those stones? They just look like big old rocks jutting up out of the ground. Now, they've reconstructed whole temples in the Middle East from a little knob of a rock. They've just finally dug Capernaum loose to where they found the octagonal church built above the site. And it is a matter of archaeological knowledge that wherever an octagonal church was built, that was the kind of church in the early Middle Ages that was only built over a, quote, relic or sacred site. So the Italian archaeologists that are digging at Capernaum right now have identified and uncovered the octagonal church that leads them to believe that it was built over the site of the original home of the Apostle Peter, where Jesus went in and healed the wife of the Apostle Peter. And yet all of this is reconstructed from just very little. These things, nobody pays any attention to them. They just get in the way of their activity. Here's another little view of part of the Abbey Circle. You're inside it now. You got these stones of various sizes just getting in the way of things. Who in the world? What are you there? Were they laying out some kind of a Goliath baseball circuit? Come on, give me some color, Joe. Let's have some fun with the cameras. There you go. Isn't that interesting what you can do with a television camera? There, hey, wait a minute. That's a better light. Now you can see the rocks. Hey, that's clever. But to the English onlookers for 1,800 years, they were rocks so big they couldn't move them, so build around them. Here's a close-up of one of the rocks with a smooth face on it. I mean, we're talking about gigantic, monstrous rocks moved to the place. I mean, they aren't rocks native to the area. Somebody put them in their pocket and carried them there. Look here. You just see... Can't you just see this farmer trying to figure out if he can use these to hold the haystack up while he's trying to get it going? It's in the way of his barn. But you get some perspective of the size of the rocks. All right, you jokers. Hay is not green, it's yellow. Now, when they're done playing, can I show you a little perspective? That's probably the best picture, because those aerial photos we were showing gave no idea of the size of the rocks. That is not a doghouse behind it. That's a standard size house. So does that give you some perspective of the rocks? I mean, what kind of gorilla carried that around and laid it down there? I mean, if you went out in the morning and found one of those in your front lawn, wouldn't you ask how it got there? Not the British. Oh, it's there. Now, only from the aerial view do you see these things are perfectly, you know, it's like a design of a mosaic that's laid out, and there may be a few missing blocks. But you can see it was laid out in a pattern that is reconstructible. Now, here is a long line of them. You don't have to mess with color here. We're helping you out, engineers. See how they're laid in a row? Now, those were not designed by the WPA of the British Empire during the Depression to tell them where to build a road. They've always been there. Nobody can ever remember when they weren't there. Always been there. Now, here is a very good shot that gives you some idea of a concentric circle of these things. Now, there are some people that go through all life and say, well, so what? You're watching the wrong channel if you're that kind of person. Look at that. Now, you've got to get an idea that these things, the rocks are not native to the area. We don't have a granite knob that's been eroded down, and this happens to be a hard section of the rock that's left while everything else eroded away. These are not native to the area. Somebody carried them in there. Who? I mean, way back behind the date when the savages were supposed to be so primitive, they didn't even have a wheel. They didn't have... All they did, the biggest job they had was get food for the day and grab their wife by the hair of the head and drag her into the cave. I guess the ones that lost out on the wives hauled the rocks around. Here's another perspective view. These rocks are all in the way, everywhere, just scattered around. Now, this interests me. I'm interested in these rocks. Who in the world would carry... Look at them. Now, look a little bit close here. The way these... You get some perspective again, the house and everything. Look the way they're all woven around in a pattern, laid down there. Here, trace them out here. Just follow these rocks all the way around the curve. See that? You know, these all these little old kiddies in the caveman ages with their little toy erector sets, setting up rocks all over the place. You don't think perspective. Right here are some little old people. They look like ants. See these? Get in close enough, you can see these are people. They're either awful little midgets or them rocks are awful big. These are people down here moving around. Look like little... wiener hounds. Now here, there's a whole chapter on why Avebury was destroyed, so much of it. Now here's the Barber's Stone. Now why in the world do they call it the Barber's Stone? Anybody figure that out? You wanna know why they call that the Barber's Stone? Well, it says right here on page 38. Now look at this one alongside the house behind it. Look at that one. Give me some color again, Joe. I'm tired of this black and white. Isn't that nice? Well, you know, those engineers back there just fighting all that machinery, they deserve a chance to play once in a while. Come on, just give me some color. Isn't it amazing what you can do with the modern technical equipment? Look at that. Ain't we having fun tonight? Look at there. A black and white picture turned to color. Look at that, right at sundown. I'm telling you, they're blame geniuses. They could have. They'll help me figure out how these rocks arrived. You want to see the plan of it in an early sketch by one Englishman that was just determined to try to figure out what the design of Avebury was and why it was built? There have been a few people try to figure out. That was done in the 1600s. Now that, remember I showed you the rocks along the road? Here's another little view of them, sort of heading off into perspective. They're the smaller rocks that lead away from the circle. Can you imagine if, look at that color, would you? They got brown plowed field and grass back there green. You guys are geniuses. Now it's starting to snow. Turn cold. This is known as the Devil's Den. It's a sketch out of medieval times of what it looked like in those days. Why do they call it the Devil's Den? Now here's William Stuckley's manuscript plan of Avebury. As early as 1721, he was calling the north and south circles the lunar and solar temples. Then he has a panorama of the district. Here is reconstructed a panorama of the way the whole thing, the lower ones, the 101, the way the whole thing looked, if you can sort of zoom in on that, as close as you can to this lower one. This is the way the whole thing was reconstructed by tracing all the stones and the way it was laid out. We have what was called Kennett Avenue, where those little stones that went off alongside the road. Well, those little stones led, this is Kennett Avenue going that way, led to a circle down here and led off the other way, and then there was a north and south circle inside the entire mound. Can you zoom in and pick up the sharpness of this detail here in this circle any better? Originally, the giant stones inside the mounds where you saw the ranch built. I don't know if there's any way to sharpen that up or not, Joe. I mean, I'm asking miracles out of you guys tonight. That's a little better. Can you pick up on your screen that there's two little circles in there? Then there's the big mound all the way around, which you were able to pick up. Ranches are built in there. Then there were lines of stones leading a path away to one side and a path leading another way to a circle down here. That's the reconstruction as it was. You want to come up to the upper picture, you'll see the mound pretty much covered in, and the north and south circles, you can still see the remnants of the circle there. And the remnants of the circle here. All that was laid out with the precision, mind you, as I will show you. The precision, in many ways, matching the pyramid. Here is the inner face of Adam, the eastern side stone of Beckington Cove. Behind it, Eve used to be the north row of Beckington Avenue. Here's Adam and Eve. No, just this one here, not the one on the other side, right there. There's Adam and Eve. I'm not going to tell you which is which.
This is the end of Side 3. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over. Thank you.